The world can seem upside down at times, which has set me on a journey in search for love, truth, and ultimately personal freedom. I'm on a mission to help people find peace and healing so that each of us as individuals and ultimately the collective can be free from whatever keeps us stuck and skews our view of just how beautiful this life can be. Welcome to the Lucas Mack Show. Hello, brothers and sisters, and welcome back to another episode of the Lucas Mack Show. You know, this episode that you're about to hear is so important because I think it's a episode that grapples and wrestles with the question of why do we go through suffering? And Jake Kaufman, who I've had on my podcast before, you know, my experience of even who he was before he had on, or the last time I had him on my podcast, to who he is today, and who I was last time he was on the podcast, to who I am today, really shows a beautiful transformation and journey of this life that we're all on and trying to experience love and know ourselves in spite of all the suffering, all the pain, and all the hardship. There is something on the other side of that, and we discussed that in this episode. I want to thank you, Jake, for coming on and holding space and bringing your beautiful soul forth. Also, everyone, Jake has a book out, and I'm going to put the link to that book in the show notes. Buy the book, support this brother. You're going to get massive, massive benefit and blessings from it. I know that. And so without further delay, everyone enjoy this episode. Everyone, like I just said, you know, I'm honored to have Jake Kaufman back, a beautiful brother and soul. And we've been talking for almost a half hour, just about what we're going through, what we're going through, what we've gone through, but really what humans ultimately, I think, have to go through to come to the end of ourselves. I think I have a coaching client, and his mom was just diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And I said, well, how are you doing? And he said, I'm really afraid. And this is just last night I was talking to him, and I said, you know, ultimately I think why we go through these things is to recognize that all that's left is love. And I don't mean that in an emotional sense of touchy-feely, but ultimately all that's left is God's love. We, in our intellect, in our abilities, you know, you just read this beautiful thing out of this powerful book, and it's like, it doesn't matter how, no money can heal another person. No intellect can change anything. You know, it's like we come to the end of ourselves to just realize that I think we were here the whole time, just to surrender to the great unknown. But in that unknown, it's like, that's really where I feel like we find the love of God, and not in this religious sense, not in this even emotional sense, even a feeling. It's ultimately like oxygen is, it sustains our life. So ultimately I think this law of love sustains. Anyway, brother, I'm so glad you're on, and everyone listening. I always presume like this is funny. This podcast is, like, it's top 200. It's interesting where this in Russia right now is the top 200 spiritual podcasts, and it fluctuates in these different countries. And I'm like, man, I know this is a human experience that we're all having. It's not, you're in Atlanta, I'm in Dallas, and it's unique to us. It's like the whole world is going through something right now. So anyway, brother, I'm honored to have you on. Thanks for joining.
It's great to be here, Lucas. I appreciate you having me and excited for this conversation, because you're right. The whole world is going through something, and everyone is, right? Well, let me just put it this way. In the men's work that we do, men are initiated with five promises, and the first one is that life is hard. The paradox being that the moment I accept the fact that life is hard, life paradoxically becomes easier. But, you know, when we, to pick up the conversation where we left off before we started to record, you know, we talked about the importance of suffering when it comes to our spiritual maturity, right? Our enlightenment, if you will, if you want to call it that. Right? Coming back home. There's this beautiful quote by Wendell Berry that I think will hopefully touch the hearts of some, which is that it may be that when we no longer know what to do, we have come to our real work. And when we no longer know which way to go, we have begun our real journey. And I feel like in many ways that that adequately describes where a lot of people are right now.
You know,
which is not knowing what to do and not really knowing where to go, right? They've reached the end of their rope, per se. And I might suggest that that's, you know, when God can really work. But of course, the truest word for that is suffering.
It's interesting too. I was talking to a friend, and you know, we're talking about what feels good, and most often, you know, there's this narrative of like, do what feels good, and that will always be your guide. And but I've done many things that feel good and have not been the best or turned out to be the correct action. We're talking about this, like, why is it in us that we can do things that feel good but are actually not the best for us? You eat lots of sugar, feels good in the moment, but you feel sick later, or, you know, whatever pleasures. And and I came to this realization that I think choice is the ultimate pleasure. And but in order to have choice, I think we have to have suffering, because if we go by what feels good, there's only that. There is no contrast to that. It's like all other things get blocked out and we go down this path. But choice, which leads to suffering, even if it's just what do I choose, in a sense of light suffering, you know, that is in a moment, like what's the right way? That's that paradoxical, you know, the paradigm that you're talking about is like, it's always inverted what we think, you know. It's just an interesting experience that we're going through.
Yeah. Well, you know, the book passage I was sharing with you before we clicked record, the author, Richard Rohr, he's a Franciscan priest, and he suggests that suffering happens whenever we're out of control. But like you mentioned, I do think it's necessary. And, you know, you're familiar with the work of Viktor Frankl, you know, who authored Man's Search for Meaning. And he talks about it in that book. He talks about that life has three meanings, and that's love, purpose, and suffering in order to return to love and purpose. And that's it. And the Bible paints this picture really beautifully. You know, it has three parables about losing and finding, right? With the prodigal son, with the lost sheep, and with the lost coin. And so that seems to be the pattern of sanctification, if you will, right? Or becoming the highest version of ourselves for those folk who prefer less religious. less religious description. But it's the pattern of losing and finding, of forgetting and remembering. Of course, the ego doesn't know what to do with this. But, you know, it is the ultimate paradox, right? We give it away to keep it. We suffer to get well. We lose it to find it. We die to live. It's just unfortunately that when we're in that space, right, of suffering, of being out of control, it is grace. It just never feels like that.
Right.
Because we don't, right, have access to this divine agenda, if you will. Right. In the Bible, it talks about, you know, God talks about how my ways are higher than your ways.
Right.
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 We don't have access to that. We can't see it. Right. Which is why I think they say that we can only connect the dots, right, we're looking back.
Right.
Where we're like, oh, I'm so happy that I went through that hardship. As hard as it is to get there, but that is the work of transformation, of alchemy.
Yeah.
Of transforming pain into power, purpose, and progress. It's only when we're finally through to it on the other side, where we, at least for most people, we can have the perspective of being grateful for that hardship. But in the moment, it just feels like dying.
Yeah. Yeah. Feels like dying is even an escape to, or, you know, the right path sometimes.
Yep.
It's interesting. My wife and I were talking earlier this week. She's sobbing. Because she's been in so much suffering for so long and it's been hard on us. And she's like, life isn't fair. It's not fair. And I was like, no, it's not. And I've never thought it was fair. I came out of the womb and was raised in hell. And I've only known pain. And it's been this weird, I think just in the past couple weeks of accepting this, I've always tried to fight against it. Like if I could just overcome or think higher or, you know, say the I am statement, really stay in that high vibration. But as much as I've done that, and I think I've done it well and earnestly, I've come back to this place of none of that stuff matters if we don't surrender and we don't come back. You know, it's still an ego and it's still
correct.
I did it versus like falling great unknown power that sustains life. The blade of grass stays the blade of grass. The leaves don't disintegrate into no matter, you know, if the form stays in its form. It's like, well, what is that power that sustains all life? Like,
unless the grain of wheat
falls to the ground and dies. Yeah.
Right. Falls to the ground and dies. But nobody wants to hear that, right?
Right. Yeah, I heard a preacher say one time, says everyone wants the upper room experience, but no one wants to die to get there.
Yep. Everybody wants to get to heaven, but yeah, you know, nobody wants to die. Yeah. No, and that couldn't be more true. You know, but if we think about life as a journey, specifically as two halves, you know, you talk about desire in the beginning.
Yeah.
Typically in the first half of life, our desires revolve around self-actualization, making something of ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Proving ourselves, right? Capable, successful.
Yeah.
But that whole game has to come undone. Yeah. It's the only thing, right? And necessary suffering is the thing that undoes it.
Right.
Because we would never give it up willingly. Why would we? Right. Like I read to you in the book earlier.
Right.
There needs to be this thing, this experience of suffering, death, disease, or divorce that we go through that forces that surrender. Right. And this is why in one of his books, Richard, he says, don't try to engineer your own enlightenment. Don't worry, it will be done to you. Right. Which is why, you know, like you, we went through a very similar personal development workshop. And, you know, I started down this path of transformation, of self-help, because like you, I went to church throughout my entire life growing up.
Yep.
I said the prayers, I read the Bible, memorized the Bible, and yet nothing was, you know, solving for these internal issues that I was experiencing because of the sexual assault that I experienced as a young child, the physical abuse that I experienced as a young child. And so I turned to self-help out of desperation and to like solve for those issues.
Yeah.
And it's as if all of that year's worth of work, and I'm embarrassed, honestly embarrassed to say how much money I spent, although it was all very, very necessary. Mm-hmm. All of that was just a warm-up.
Yeah.
For, you know, what we talked about, which was this traumatic brain injury that I experienced a little over 2 years ago that I'm still not fully recovered from. I'm still suffering side effects of. To have all of these mental resources stripped away, all of this assertiveness, this determination, you know, this ambition that has always been very easily and readily accessible to me, to find myself in the depths of darkness and depression. That was it. That was the catalyst. You know, it wasn't a course. It wasn't a seminar or a workshop. There's nothing wrong with those things.
Right.
Those are a great place to start. But if you're on a personal development journey, if you're in pursuit of spiritual maturity, that has to happen to you. If you believe what, you know, Carl Jung says, you know, I mean, there's a reason that St. Paul's motto is in weakness, strength. But the ego can't hear that. It flies right over its head, right? What do? We go back to like maintaining positive thoughts,
right?
Or, you know,
becoming
more self-disciplined, doubling down on high performance habits or whatever it is.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, all in an attempt to kind of escape liminal space. Right. It's Jonah in the belly of the whale.
Right.
You know, that graced space where we're out of control, the truest word for that, like we've talked about, is suffering.
Right.
Right. But it has to happen.
As you're talking, I've heard this, A.W. Tozer had this quote that I heard, his friend Leonard Ravenhill, quote quite often and had a massive impact on me, but he said something. I was watching this interview of Leonard Ravenhill talk about his conversations he used to have with A.W. Tozer, and A.W. Tozer said, he goes, "Len, there's one thing you can say about a man carrying his cross: you will never see that man again." And I'd heard that and I'm like, yeah, go die to self. But ultimately I didn't understand to the depths. And this is, I'm someone who attempted suicide and failed, and that woke me up in a way. Yeah. But this, like, it's not even about the Christian paradigm of death and resurrection. It's like the cross is the symbol of, like, I have nothing left. I have no, you know, I'm stretched out and I have nothing. I am nothing in this grand cosmic attempt to transform myself with myself, for myself, from myself. It's like ultimately all that. And even when I say I'm nothing, like, well, you know, okay, whatever falls, you fall. But ultimately, this is where I think you're saying grace comes in. It's like, I just want to be a vessel for the highest love and the highest good. But I don't want to do it in my own attempt. It's like, this is what I think I've learned the past 2 years, is like just humility and wisdom, not like anything of like banner waving. Just like, no, just humility and wisdom. I'll be in the corner. I'll just be sitting and watching things. I've had to even question, even, you know, am I going to do a podcast anymore? And I changed the podcast to the Lucas Mack Show, kind of, you know, getting out of. And I even asked God, you know, before we end this, I was like, all right, God, what's the difference of this show? Like, what do you want me to do? And I heard him say, I want you to pray for the guest and for everyone listening at the end of every episode. So that's what I've been doing. And it's like,
Beautiful.
That's not, I'm not leaving people with like some mind-blowing like sentiment. It's just like, man, it's just humility and wisdom ultimately. Yep.
Well, that's what you get when you do fully surrender to liminal space, or this necessary suffering, right? Liminal space is just when we're in the experience. The word liminal is Latin. It comes from the Latin word meaning limen, which means threshold. Where we cross over, right, from the first half of life to the second half of life, where it goes from being about us and making something of ourselves, as Carl Jung would say, self-actualization or the path of individuation. All of that has to happen in order to put us on the path towards transformation and transcendence, where we're brought into relationship with a higher purpose and a higher power. Right. But most people want nothing to do with that process. And so what do? They go back into their old ways of being, doing, living, and performing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Where they allow their lower desires to claim victory over their higher desires. You know, and that's kind of one of the distinctions, right? Is, you know, eventually in life, you have to learn that, you know, it's not about me and my life is not my own. Right? And in the space of that acceptance, right? Well, then it becomes more about community and tying yourself down to something, for example, you know, like a family or mastering a skill. Which is hard to do, you know, like, for example, mastery is slow and it's arduous.
Right.
And it takes a long time.
Right.
But, you know, especially in the world that we live in of instant gratification, and I think this is why so many young teens are suffering with depression and anxiety, and, you know, the rate of suicide is just, it's gone up so much. I don't have any statistics to speak to this, but I listened to it in a podcast recently, a podcast episode. The podcast is called The Art of Manliness. And it was the David Brooks episode. I'm happy to send it to you to put it in the show notes, but he provides some very startling statistics around the increase in teen suicide. And I think so much of it has to do with this instant gratification culture that we live in, where upon being met by the requirements of mastery, for example, you know, just, or building fluency around any skill, they haven't really been initiated by hardship. And they're incredibly disturbed to find what that does inside of them.
Yeah.
Because, right, it forces them to confront all of their doubt and their fear and their insecurities in a way that, of course, things like social media simply distract us from.
Right. Right. It seems like, you know, I was so into politics. I got really in 2020, like went hard.
Sure.
Hard into politics, and I didn't comply. I didn't, and lost my job. We had to move our family, 7.5 month pregnant wife, 3 kids, like, because I wanted bow in that. And it's interesting what's come through my journey of being so heavy down every rabbit hole. I mean, I love conspiracies. They're the most
sure.
They're more entertaining to me than anything on Netflix. So I'll go down every rabbit hole. And
for sure,
the guy on the podcast recently, he had the best title description of himself. He goes, "I have a black belt in conspiracy theory," and I laughed. I'm like, "That's pretty good." But as I've gone through all that, and I understand all that, and even in that, it seems like there is a human that will still get the glory in all of that. And to me, that's exhausting as well, because there's no acknowledgement of this journey that we're talking about, the true journey. It's like, it's so surface. And what made me think of this when you say social media and this like distraction, it's like, it's such an immediate gratification of even, you know, like a political figure comes back and everything's gonna be better. It's just like looking like you're swiping, you know, through Instagram, like, oh, it's happening, versus the truth. And what I guess I'm hoping, my desire is that this veneer, and I think it is, I think this podcast and many others, there's this veneer slowly getting peeled back. And it's not like, oh, we got to be authentic, or no, we have to be vulnerable. Cause I, you know, I had the podcast, The Vulnerable Hero. I talked about, it's almost like we just need to be still with one another and like, cry with one another, or there's something, I don't know what it is, but I sense this, like, it was funny you said the individual then to the community or something. It's like this, the me gets reversed into the we,
yeah,
through suffering. It's like, well, now I want to be part of something, versus like, I don't know what I'm saying. I'm still trying to find the words, but it's like,
you're onto something there, 100%. You know, I do believe on some level that, you know, when Paul was referring to dying to the flesh in the New Testament, I think he was just referring to the false self and the spirit representing the true self.
Yeah.
I think it was just different language.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It's very easy when we first, because it's very easy when you first step into personal development to simply bring another version of your performer into it.
Yeah.
And by performer, I just mean your false self.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because once you come into recognition of your false self, it's not like it just goes away. And in fact, I would suggest that we will never actually have our true self as an ego possession, which is why losing, finding, forgetting, remembering, right, is the path, right? But when we first go into self-help, and I, for myself, this was so true. I never told my story of sexual assault until years after I went through all of this personal development work, this workshop, same one you went through, simply different company, because I was terrified of what people would say, what they would think of me, whether or not I would be accepted. And so I was vulnerable, but I was acting as if I was vulnerable.
Yeah. I mean,
right? and this acting as if in many ways controls so many men's lives. And I would suggest so many people's lives, where, you know, we're acting as if we're successful when internally, you know, so many people are rich in money, poor in happiness, or we're acting as if we're fine when we're really not. Or in my case, you know, I was acting as if I was vulnerable, but I was still, it was still performative. And so, and I, again, there's nothing wrong with this.
Yeah. There's not judgment. It's just an understanding of, yeah.
Correct. It's just an awareness of, not a judgment for.
Right.
Of kind of the path that we all have to go through. You know, when you think about transformation, what propels people to want to change? Mm-hmm. It's this fundamental notion that I am not who I'm capable of being. And that propels people into
right? Great love, great suffering. It's those two things that get people to change.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Because as Tony Robbins says, until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change, you're not going to change.
Right.
So great love or great suffering seem to be the only two things that are capable of really pushing us to do this. But the paradox is that eventually you get to a point in your journey where you're like, oh, nothing needs fixing. And I don't actually need to change. And that paradoxically is what gets people to change.
Wow.
Right? Because what do we do in that moment? We relax. And when we relax, what do? When we relax in that way, we do that which comes most naturally and authentic to us, and we let go of our addictions. We no longer allow these, you know, lower desires to take precedence over like these higher desires, right? For example, like this lower desire for comfort food, right? I don't allow that to take precedent over my higher desire for health and vitality and you know, a healthy lifestyle, for example. You know, we've worked through all of that. We've come out on the other side of it. And that's when we've really actually transformed.
It's interesting you say that, calming. I took a new job as the head of brand for a company in North America, and it's an amazing company, and I've loved it. But I've always run my own ad agencies and creative agencies, and the pace of an agency is immediate and fast. And there's 12 months that you're planning for, not 5-year plans. There's like, you know, a quarter. And someone asked me the other day, they said, what's the difference between being at an agency versus in-house at a company? And I said, really the biggest change is my nervous system had to reset.
Oh, sure. I bet.
And it's like, but I'm also, I think that to me was a greater lesson of what I'm actually going through right now. It's just my nervous system just resetting to just be calm. And it's interesting. I'm like, oh yeah, you say addictions, like addiction is in the anxiety. All addictions are tied to anxiety. I believe that wholeheartedly. Right. Yep. Well, anxiety. Oh, keep, no, go for it, brother.
I was just going to say, I mean, every addiction by definition is in an attempt to solve for pain.
Bingo.
It's very easy to look at things like drugs, alcohol, or pornography and say, well, those things are bad. Yeah. And obviously they do have very negative side effects over the long term. But if we have a deeper conversation around addiction, there's the addiction to looking good, which I would suggest is one of my masks for sure. Having it all together, shopping, video games, television, social media, internet, working out, obsessively working out, restrictive dieting or eating, you know,
relationships.
And a lot of those things have very inherent positive benefits. For example, going to the gym, restrictive eating, so on, and, you know, working, you know, but it isn't until, you know, we learn the language of the soul, right? We confront our pain that we relax, like you mentioned, because I heard a quote recently that said that hurry is violence to the soul.
It gives me chills. That's a good one. Hurry is violence to the soul. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because, you know, when you look out in nature, nothing is rushed, but everything is accomplished.
Yes. Yes.
And I truly believe that that's how we were meant to live. If you go to Scandinavia, this is very, very prevalent in their culture. In Italian culture, it's called dolce far niente, the sweetness of doing nothing. We don't know that in our culture or in our society.
Right.
You know, we know 3 weeks of vacation and then that's about it.
Yep. Yep.
But so as a lifestyle, right, we don't have these things that we do consistently for the purposes of leisure, right? We've become obsessed with, and I do believe this, that unconscious enslavement for especially men nowadays looks like constantly needing to be a better version of themselves. Constantly. Right? Because the underlying notion that is driving that pursuit, when you really dig beneath it, is it is a lack of worthiness and shame.
Both, it's interesting, worthiness. My friend Jamie Kern Lima just came out with a book, Worthiness, and it's New York Times bestseller, and it's just big. And shame. I don't know if I said this to you in one of the podcasts we did, like maybe your and I's very first podcast, but shame starts with shh. And it tells everyone to be quiet and silent, and it silences us. And then when, you know, just the default to be quiet.
Sure.
You never feel worthy if you're not even validated for thoughts or, you know, to be able to articulate oneself.
Sure.
And that's really, it's really interesting you're saying that, because if we're told there's always, and this is the paradox, getting back to this paradox, because there's always more. There's always a next level. There's always,
sure,
you know, there's another book to read. There's another podcast to listen to. There's another mile to run. There's,
of course.
You know,
that game has to kind of fall apart, like I said, right? This high performance game that most men are playing, and I say men, you know, women do this too in their own way. I really simply reference men because, you know, I focus my work with men.
Right.
But that high performance game that so many men are playing in the effort to become successful, it really does need to fall apart. It's the only thing that can get us to surrender to this higher power, this higher purpose, whatever that looks like for you, you know, that says my life is not my own. This is not about me. You know, what am I called to do? What is my gift? And how can I share that with the world? And let God sort out the rest, the money thing, right? For example.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I think God was talking about, you know, when he said that, you know, the path is narrow.
Yeah.
Because that level of surrender is so, so difficult. So it's so difficult. I mean, as an example, after I had my brain injury, I desperately was trying to keep my business afloat because I didn't want to have to fire any employees. We had become very much a family.
Yeah.
And so I overexerted myself in an effort to continue to make the revenue that the business needed to pay the employees.
Right.
And eventually I had to let people go.
Yeah.
And it got so bad to the point to where I didn't even know if I would be able to pay my own personal bills.
Right.
And every month, God provided, the universe provided, whatever you want to say. Every month there was provision, and sometimes it didn't make sense, you know, where like if something didn't come through within a few days, right, I wouldn't be able to pay my mortgage. And every time, every month it came through and it happened and I was provided for, until finally I'm embarrassed to say this, but like after a year, I was like, okay, God, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
I will surrender to this. And that for me looked like surrendering to healing my brain injury, which looked like slowing down, like kind of what you're doing, you know, at your job and what that is allowing, right? This spaciousness,
yeah.
This spaciousness that is allowing you to downregulate and to increase your baseline level of safety.
Yes. Yes.
And that looked like me being like, okay, I'm going to allow myself to sleep. Because after a brain injury, you need so much rest. You need so much sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Obviously, for everyone, that looks different, right? Surrender, right? This concept of surrender. For me, it looked like I'm going to surrender to my recovery, to listening to my body and giving it what it needs, and trusting that God will provide me with a full-time income while working only part-time and prioritizing my recovery. It was one of the scariest things I've ever done.
Yeah, I imagine.
But it was truly the only thing that could get me into this space of surrendering to this bigger plan, this divine agenda, whatever it is that you want to call it, that says, I have a unique part to play in that. And I am going to do whatever I can, even if it's surrendering my ambition, whatever that ambition is, or my desires, for the sake of this bigger divine agenda or plan for humanity.
Yeah.
Maximizing my gift, mastering my craft that is in service to others, that benefits others, enriches the lives of others.
Right.
And trusting that I will be provided for in that. Such a hard thing to do.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, brother.
And such a hard thing to do.
Like, validate what you're saying. And it's interesting. One of the things you were saying, you know, there's this verse in the Bible, Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not to your understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. And then verse 7 says, be not wise in thine own eyes, fear the Lord and depart from evil. Yeah. And I've quoted those things so many times. And then at the end of that chapter in Proverbs 3:32, it says, further forward are an abomination to the Lord, but his secret is with the righteous. And I'm like, what is the secret of God? What is this thing that God only, and you, this, why I'm thinking of this when you said the narrow path. And I used to ask people all the time, like, do you trust God? And I say, yeah, I trust God, or I'm trusting God. I'm like, but does God trust you?
Sure.
And I used to say that in kind of a gotcha and this preaching way and all this stuff. But ultimately, I don't think God can trust anyone that doesn't come to the end of themselves, you know, but once you come to the end of yourself, maybe that's where the real secret is. And what is the secret? It's like,
it's weakness.
And it's meekness, essentially, or weakness. It's this, who right. inherits the earth? Those who come to the end of their own strength. Yes.
It's the secret is weakness, right?
Hmm.
Right. My power is made perfect in what? In weakness, right? And when you think about how Jesus embodied this, what did he do right before, the night before he was arrested by the Romans and eventually crucified? He said, God, may this cup depart from me or pass from me. This very human moment of weakness, because he actually knew that there was no other way to, you know, accomplish the salvation of mankind. He knew that he was fully God, but fully man. So he had this beautiful moment of weakness that says, I know that this is going to be a horrible death.
Yeah.
And I do not want to go through that. Right. Weakness. We all have to be brought to that place, right? The edge of our own private resources, because that's the only time in which God's power can be made perfect.
Yeah.
And we give up trying to have it our own way, right? Right, that whole game of individuation, self-actualization, making something of myself,
right,
propping myself up, becoming a success, right? That game just it falls apart, which is why any great spiritual teacher will always glorify the bottom, because right in the first half of life, what are we obsessed with? Building our tower.
As
a metaphor, right? Yeah. Building our tower, right? But then God's going to call us down from it. Why? Because there's actually nothing at the top that isn't available to you at the bottom. The secret is weakness. But if you are living in the false self, the flesh,
right?
And there's a lot of studies to show that most, especially evangelical Christians in the United States, actually more, when polled, actually more closely align with a Pharisaical worldview than they do with like a godly biblical worldview.
Right.
Like the Pew Research Institute has done incredible studies on this and polls around that, which is somewhat sad, but also what an opportunity.
Yeah.
If you are firmly living in the first half of life and from the false self, you will not be able to hear that. It goes right over the ego's head.
100%. 100%.
We ignore it, right? And we go right back to what? We go right back to playing the game, right? And for men, this looks like the game of getting paid and getting laid.
Yeah. It's interesting, as you're talking, I just see that there's a generation of elders being formed right now, being raised.
Yeah.
And the elders are all of us who have like,
Yep.
Just wisdom. I mean, ultimately wisdom. I think we've been lacking. We have a generation that's lacked wisdom. We had knowledge. The Bible says knowledge shall increase in the last days, but God also says my people shall perish for lack of knowledge. And it's like knowledge can feed ego.
Right. Well, because knowledge, I can have all knowledge, but without wisdom, it is as if I know nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
In order to gain wisdom, you kind of have to go through some shit.
Oh, bro.
Both of which you and I know.
Yes.
Full well, given what we've gone through the past few years, but that's the truth, right? You know, which is why I think you kind of have to hold on to this idea that, that all is grace. Because you know, like there are moments where you're like, I don't even care about being on the other side of this. All I want is to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, because for me, for months, and I'm sure for you, for months, it's just you want some tiny shred of hope. And that's what I think so many people are searching for. I was reading the other day about the economic impact of the rise in inflation and the cost of living and how that is crippling so many people. Like less than 18% of people in the United States make six figures.
Wow.
You know, wages are flat. It's incredibly unfortunate. And, you know, both parents are having to work and it's taking time away from the kids and robbing parents of like these really beautiful moments, in early childhood, in the early years of their kids' lives, and obviously impacting their development.
Yeah.
And it's having such profound mental side effects. And in those moments, all you're looking for is just like, I don't even care about being on the other side of this. All I want is to see the light at the end of the tunnel, to know that it's there.
Right.
And man, is that a difficult place to be, to trust that like it will come, like the day will come when you will see the light at the end of the tunnel. It may take 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's hard.
Or longer.
Or longer. Yeah, or exactly. Or longer. You know, Moses, right? Take Moses, for example. Yeah. He spent the first 40 years of his life thinking that he was somebody, and then he spent 40 years in the desert becoming nobody. And then what did God do? God said, watch what I can do with someone who has become no one. The secret is weakness.
So good. Brother, this, if nothing else, was a massive blessing for me. And thank you for your heart. And my experience of you even is a greater depth than even last time we talked, and certainly since the first time we ever talked. And
it was like 6 years ago.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. I really do. I really appreciate it. Let me pray for you, brother, as we close out. Father God, I thank you so much for my brother Jacob. What an amazing, amazing man that you have molded him into. And Father, I thank you for every person that's listening all around the world. Father, whatever they're going through, whatever we're going through, I pray that you're, I don't want a verse, I don't want a saying, but I want it to be so viscerally real in our lives that your grace is made perfect in our weakness. Your strength is made perfect in our weakness, that your love is made perfect in our weakness. And I just pray that as we all process everything that we're going through, that we learn this depth of surrender so that we can fully be at peace in your love and in your presence, but also in the fact that we are held. We are divinely held in your hands. And I just ask for your continual blessing over Jake and his business and over everyone's finances right now. It's such a crushing time for so many. And I just pray you would just continually open the floodgates to pour out your blessing and that you get all the glory ultimately. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen.
Amen.
Brother, thank you for coming on. Thank you for the blessing that you are to me, this episode, and everyone listening. And God bless you, brother. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Lucas. It was a pleasure.
And Brother Jake, again, thank you for coming on and thank you for this conversation. I needed it. It was the right time, and I know it will bless many around the world. So brothers and sisters, I love you all. I do. I love you all. Just sending you love, whatever you're going through. The world is insane right now. We all know that. And yet, in spite of all the insanity that we see, God's love is the sustaining force that can bring us all through this. So keep releasing all your fear, releasing all the pain, giving it back to God, where God can transmute it all into a powerful testimony and story in your life to bless others. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, that's all that matters, is that we love God and love others. And how we can show them love is by sharing our stories so that they don't feel alone in their journey. Brothers and sisters, I am Lucas Mack. This is the Lucas Mack Show, and I will talk to you on the next episode. Thank you for listening. If you're struggling to break free and need support, go to my website at lucasmack.com. There you'll find resources like videos and ebooks, and also information on how to work with me for coaching. Thank you again, and I'll talk to you soon.